of this pure musical interaction. But one time when we were alone in Holland, she said, let's go for a drive. And I said, where? She said, I'll show you. And we drove miles out into the countryside, and now we're on a dirt road, and she says, turn right. And we see some Quonset huts, and we come up to the Quonset huts, and it was an airfield. And I said, what are we doing, Nina? And it was a glider field, and she said, we're going up. And she knew everybody there, and she loved to go up in gliders and do sailplaning, and up we went. And we're circling around, and she's below me in another glider, and she waves up with a big smile, and I wave back at her, and she was at peace. It was really amazing.
And in the last 15 seconds, what you hope to do with this film, Liz?
Well, I think Nina is a model of how an entertainer inspires and engages politically. And I think today she's a voice we need sorely. And I think that, you know, for other artists and celebrities today kind of looking to get involved in the movement, Nina Simone did it, and she inspired people, and she never compromised.
Liz Garbus and Al Shachman, we thank you both for being with us. Liz Garbus, the Academy Award-nominated filmmaker, this new film, What Happened, Miss Simone, opening today in theaters in New York and Los Angeles, releases on Netflix on Friday. And Al Shachman, up in Martha's Vineyard, guitarist and music director for over 40 years. Thanks so much to Martha's Vineyard Community Television. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with guest host Lisa Loving. Today's guest is community organizer and activist supreme, Teresa Rayford, and we'll talk about current events.
It's that time again. Time for another three-day community festival at Good in the Hood 2015, which is sure to bring even more than before. Starting June 26th through June 28th at Lil's Albina Park, there will be a celebration of community with live music, kids space, lots of local foods, and a chance for health screening too. KBOO is also in the Good in the Hood parade, and we want our members and volunteers to participate. For more information, contact Ani Haynes at volunteer@kboo.org. Again, Good in the Hood, Friday, June 26th through Sunday, June 28th. And KBOO will be broadcasting live on Saturday, June 27th. See you in the hood.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 28th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place July 2nd through 5th at Waterfront Park in Portland. Four stages, 100 performers, including the Greg Allman Band, Galactic with Macy Gray, and Buddy Guy. There will be after-hours performances, shows on the Portland Spirit, and much more. Again, that's the 28th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, Thursday, July 2nd through Sunday, July 5th at Waterfront Park in Portland. For more information, go to kboo.fm/waterfrontbluesfestival2015.
And you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. Sitting in for Paul Rowland, I'm your host, Lisa Loving. And today, Black Lives Matter. Our guest is community organizer and social activist, Teresa Rayford of Don't Shoot Portland and more. Teresa, thanks for coming in this morning.
Well, thank you, Lisa.
It's always a pleasure to hear you on these airwaves. I'm moving the mic closer to you. You know, overall, on this issue. I just feel like people in the city, even people who want to be allies and want to help, they seem to not be able to tell the difference between different Black people. I'm sorry I said that, but I did. And they don't know the difference between different kinds of African-American community organizations and what they do. So I want to talk about that a little bit later. But first, there's so much news, and you're doing the Know Your Rights trainings. Is that right?
Oh, my goodness, absolutely.
Let's start there. What are the details on that? Are you doing that this weekend? And
well, we've been doing Know Your Rights training since August of 2014, mm-hmm. after Mike Brown was killed. We started out in Dawson Park. We would go into churches, schools, anywhere where they would invite us in. But this summer, we started a Don't Shoot PCC Club over there at the Cascade campus, because a lot of the campuses were asking us to come and teach Know Your Rights to their multicultural centers. And pretty much because of numbers that don't lie, stops for people of color. And so after we did that, that group that established the club said, hey, what more can we do to help the established organization? And I said, well, since you're in the neighborhood with the most marginalized community members, why not extend the Know Your Rights training to some of the youth in our community, and especially before summer, because I attend the gang task force meetings. And a lot of what they're talking about is basically who they're going to stop, where they're going to stop them, why they're going to stop them, and who are they related to give them a possible cause to do that stop. So I want the children to be basically empowered with how to assert their rights so that they don't have to deal with just the racial profiling that we all know about. Mm-hmm. And so they've been connected with the Boys and Girls Club. They did the MLK location. They did one out in St. John's in North Trenton. And they've gotten several calls from different facilities, so they'll be continuing over the summertime. And I'm just really excited. This Friday, actually, we're doing a rally in partnership again with that same organization and some other student groups at PCC in support of my church, which is Bethel AME, which is a part of the Charleston family. And so at that rally, we'll be talking about the Know Your Rights and how to become more active, not only in your community, but to support the elders within that church congregation.
Let's nail the roof on real quick on that. That's a Friday rally. Where is it and what time? Let's just get that out there and I'll write
it down. It's going to be at 6 o'clock at Bethel AME. We're hoping that we can use the parsonage across the street. There's a big lot there that's owned by the church. And I thought, let's do a block party over there. Let's do something outside where we can all come together and we can basically celebrate and just give honor to our community. That church has started an economic development corporation, which is some of the things that I've been working on. It's like, you need economic power, you need economic strength. And so to have them in a position to support community and to have community wanting to support them because of this tragedy just takes us to triumph. So,
mm-hmm. I'm going to look up the address of Bethel AME Church sometime before the end of this show so that we can put that out there, because I'm sure there's people that want to support,
absolutely.
But they don't necessarily know how.
5828 Northeast Jarrett, 8th and Jarrett. Sorry
and
Jarrett. About that.
Oops. Cool, 8th and Jarrett. All right. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm sitting in this morning. I'm Lisa Loving, sitting in for Paul Roland, and our guest is Teresa Rayford. We're gonna try to cover a lot of ground because there's a lot of stuff going on. And Teresa, I always respect your point of view because I feel that you really are speaking from the grassroots. And I don't know who's paying you to do it. I'm sorry, that sounds horrible, but I mean, people should get paid to do the work that they do. But I feel as if you know more what's going on. You're not on anybody's payroll, and so you're more straight talking about what's going on. And sometimes that's kind of painful, but there it is. So I wanted to ask you, though, so you had just talked about the Know Your Rights trainings, all these wonderful organizations. Who should we thank that's supporting you on that? You had said the Boys and Girls Clubs. There's a bunch of them.
And we don't get paid even for doing those. We're looking at building infrastructure. We started an organization called Oregon Know Your Rights. And so people that you can thank for our training and even our guidance is organizations like the ACLU, like the Portland Law Collective, like the National Lawyers Guild. Those different organizations over the last year have done several legal workshops and different trainings to help us be where we are as an organized activist group. And so, they've put their priorities to empower us, and we're doing the same thing, just paying it forward.
That's really good to know. How to even start? The shootings in Charleston, that man who killed the people in the church, that was one that I had to change my point of view about things. around that issue. Yeah. I want to say that out loud to people who are listening. Because at first I was the same person. I was like, oh, he's crazy. I don't even know what it means when I say that, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what it means. But people like David Walker on my social media stream were like, no, this is a crime. This is something that happens. It's not just this guy. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that a little? Can you frame that? What's going on when we say that, you know, that unbelievable massacre was, oh, he's just crazy. What is
that?
You know,
we live in America, Lisa. We live in a country that all of the assets are around us in our social environments. And one of the biggest assets we have is the white man. So he couldn't possibly, you know, come down to a level of murder, you know. And so it's just hard to condemn them, because throughout our history, even though we know about all of the negativity, they're still uplifted in our communities. The white man is just like, he would never do that. He had to have some type of mental disability. But when you hear the same thing happen about a black person, immediately you see that arrest record. You know that he had trouble in the home. He grew up with no family.
Maybe he's Muslim, and that might mean
exactly.
He's a terrorist.
Exactly. I mean, they'll come to you with everything negative. And with this guy, Dylan, I mean, you saw the pictures of him as a kid and all these different nice, cuddly photos. And then they started, you know, basically saying, well, look at the guy in Colorado that was sick and his hair was in different colors and he thought he was the Joker. And I'm like, no, this kid went back home and sat up, put his feet up and played video games. And he agreed to leave with them. They didn't have to. I mean, even the way that they approached the whole situation, they accommodated his issue, you know, and they call it mental health. And we know better than that. Hate is hate.
It's interesting because Byron De La Beckwith, I think, is who was convicted of the Birmingham church bombing. And I feel like you have to compare these side by mm-hmm. side because Byron De La Beckwith, I don't, you know, at the time, it's easy for us now to look back and say, oh, man, the racist guy. I wonder at the time what people were saying, except that maybe there in Birmingham, the people who knew who it was, the Klan, mm-hmm. hello.
They congratulated him more likely. I mean, now they yeah. want to congratulate Dylan for what he's done. There's organizations that stand behind him. But because we've lost in touch with our history and everybody sees this big frilly picture of the blacks are not working hard and they're lazy and the whites are always having to pull mm-hmm. them up and help them out, we've missed that paradigm.
Right.
And so now people are starting to reach back into history and it's making sense. So we'll just let, you know, history take care of itself, but it's coming back.
I want to direct people to the Columbian newspaper in Vancouver. Apparently, there's a place in Vancouver where there's a Confederate battle flag that's flown in public that you can see from Interstate 5. And people are looking at that. They're trying to figure out a way to get the landowner or something to take the flag down. It's kind of an interesting thing. And Vancouver, you know what? If you're listening right now, this is KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm Lisa. I'm sitting in for Paul. And we're in the studio live with Teresa Rayford. And if you live in Vancouver and if you've got something to say about that Confederate battle flag and you've got some information, we'd love to hear from you. 503-231-8187. We got a full slate of callers. Let's go to the phone lines.
Joanne?
Hey, we got Joanne on the phone. What's going on, Joanne?
Oh, Lisa, will you just please have some patience while I try to get my words? I got pains all over my body hissing in my ear that I don't take meds for. Anyway, I'll try to get the words and thoughts out. And also, I'm worried about my grandson who has got brown skin. He's living in one of the cities on the coast of Washington. Anyway, I'm trying to get my words out. Okay, yes, a question. The Confederate flag, well, I forgot the word. Will that help, getting rid of the Confederate flag in the U.S., will that help pull the roots of racism out? And also, I'd like to find a way, before I die, I guess it's not going to happen, to pull the roots out of sexism. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for calling, Joanne. I miss you, Joanne. I actually do. I feel like Joanne put some of the hottest bubbling pots on the table. And so here we go. And it's that whole thing. And now Joanne did not say this, but the way I hear other people phrasing this is, don't they have freedom of speech, right? So freedom of speech versus the right to, hoist a flag with a swastika on it or something. Somebody said to me once, the good thing about freedom of speech is it lets you know who the I almost used an obscenity, who the obnoxious peoples are. But so this whole issue of getting rid of the flag, will that get rid of the racism? What do you think, Teresa?
Well, it's not going to get rid of the racism, but I think that we need to remove symbols of hate. We have, you know, schools named after slave owners, and we have
all
streets
over our town
named after, you know, Ku Klux Klan members and Grand Dragons, buildings and all of these things, and everybody's wanting us to accommodate their presence in our world. And when we look at our world, we're looking at gay rights, we're looking at transgender rights, we're looking at human rights being everything that we need. And so if we're filled with hate around us, we're never going to feel like we're obligated to respect anyone's rights. I mean, let's burn all those symbols of hate. Let's tell the stories behind them. And like President Obama said, put them in a museum and make sure that people know the stories behind them and the people that are connected to them, and make those people start telling their stories so that we can make sure the next generation has that memo.
You know, and the other piece of it, I think, Joanne, that we as a society and as a community need to set the standards mm-hmm. for how we treat each other and what, you know, what is acceptable behavior. And we struggle with that. I mean, the United States is a fundamentalist country. We're just like the Taliban. You know what? We really are. No question
different.
About it. And if you look at the level of violence in this country, it is a low-level war zone. It's not like a shooting war necessarily per se, but there have been loads of studies just in the past year or two that talk about how many people get shot by guns, accidentally or not, right? The level of violence that we have in this country is like a war zone, and we are just like Afghanistan, to be honest with you.
Absolutely.
That's just my personal opinion. So, but I think, Joanne, we as intelligent thinking people who actually care about others, mm-hmm. I think that we need to set the standard, and we need to say, no, this is unacceptable. A lot of people don't realize that in Germany, you know, they don't have as much free speech in Europe as we do. I used to argue this with my father-in-law, but I had to admit he was right. And in Germany, like, you can't make all these references to the Nazis, and it's because Germany is so horrified forever at what happened to the Gitan people, the Jewish people, all the people, the queer people, even all of the social progressive people
yes.
that fought against the Nazis. They were all thrown in there. You know, it's just, to me, they're trying to set a standard, not that they're 100% successful, but they sure did do a lot, actually, to be honest with you. But I think that it is us saying we're a civilized society, and we don't have to, you know, make everyone be the same or think the same, but you can't go around threatening to kill people. That's the part that gets me too. What kind of person threatens to kill other people? I'm fascinated by that. If we could figure out a way in this country, because that guy, and I'm not mm-hmm. even going to say his name, I'm not even going to say that guy's name that did the shooting in Charleston. He told bazillions of people that he wanted
yeah.
to do that. He talked about it constantly. Who lifted a finger? Somebody gifted him with a gun, right? You're like, happy birthday. And then I read the interview with, was it his brother, his relative, or his friend, who said they took his gun away. The friend
mm-hmm.
took the gun
and
away,
hit it in the bed.
But then his wife said, I think that you could get in trouble for that because you're not even supposed to have a weapon. So we gave it back. And then the shooting happened.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, stop me. I just got my first coffee. We're going to go back to the phone lines. James is on the phone. What's up with you today, James? What's going on?
Oh, you know, I was just, I was talking with some friends online about this because, you know, my church is involved in this. You know, my music pastor and assistant pastor just went down to South Carolina to go support the folks over at Mother AME. And, you know, and I think the one thing that really bugs me is that they're not labeling this a terrorist act. And I'll tell you why. Not sure if you're if you remember a young man named Floyd Corkins II,
no.
who walked into the Family Research Council where Josh Duggar worked before they found out he molested his siblings and a babysitter.
Wow.
And he walked in there with 15 Chick-fil-A sandwiches and was about ready to massacre everyone in the Family Research Council. But according to what I've read, he had a change of heart. They still arrested him, and he was the first person, and he was a young black man, by the way. He was the first person to be charged for terrorism after the 9/11, like local terrorism, and you know, and he didn't even kill anybody.
I never heard of that case. Wow.
This young man goes into a church and kills 9 black folks. And it's like, well, he's mentally ill, you know. And while I'm up to debate about whether racism itself is a mental illness, although I'd probably say that it is, But it's the fact that all major media outlets are really trying to not frame this as terrorism. And when it absolutely is, I mean, he obviously knows the history of Mother AME. Mm-hmm. And it's a pillar that has stood for black justice. And it is, and the fact that he would go in there and he would spout those things and then he would just lay them out. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I believe for a long time that the Confederate flag could really, you know, because, you know, I've known people who don it, but they've never appeared to me to be hateful people. But, I mean, the fact that people still feel this way after all this time, you know, after everything that's gone on, everything that's happened, I mean, we definitely need to take it down.
Yeah.
And by the way, that flag that they're talking about is at the Sons of Confederate Veterans Mm-hmm. Cemetery out in Ridgefield.
Okay, yeah, that's where it is, yeah.
Yeah, and then there's also the one that they talked about down in Salem, that's the Mississippi state flag, the one that has the Confederate stars and bars on it as well.
Okay, all right, James, thank you so much for calling.
And James, I just wanted to say that in America, the way when we've been hearing all these stories from Black America for years about discrimination and unjust justice systems and things of that sort, we have to realize that when you do something like this in America, there is a team that's rallying for you. There's more empathy for what you've done because it revolutionizes their power,
the racist bloc, which is like the roots of this country. Mm-hmm. My God, you know,
they love that boy doing that. Like he said, there's going to be some smart white people that do the same thing. He's honorable, you know, to him in his life, the way that he did the research, the way that he carried it out, the way that he, you know, had the relationships with his friends and let them know what he was doing. He was excited about doing this.
Yeah.
This was something that was turning him on, and the people in his network and his circle didn't think anything wrong about it. But that was his desire, was to deal with whatever he was going to deal with as far as the consequences. I heard that he had planned to kill himself, but maybe he was just not that courageous. But he wanted to, I mean, right now we live in social media world, and I saw a meme the other day that showed people in heaven looking at their hands, and they were like, something's wrong with them. They're all looking at their hands. Well, they've died, but they're still wanting to check their Facebook status and their emails and their Twitters. This boy probably didn't kill himself because he wanted to find out how it was going to be received by people. And we got to realize we live in that sick type of society. And then I'm looking right now. There's a park in Portland, Jefferson Davis Park. This story came out in the Willamette Weekly. We have a Confederate flag here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, those things are honorable. Those symbols are honorable to people that benefited from the hate. That's part of their power. So, you know, when you're talking about the remorse that people in Germany feel, and you're talking about the lack of outrage that we feel here and how we make excuses,
thank you.
Think about where we are.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Lisa Loving. I'm your host today. I'm filling in for Paul Roland. We're live in the studio with Teresa Rayford. We're talking about current events. We're talking about what's going on in Portland. And I also want to say, you know, with that thing about, you know, white people saying that the guy's just crazy, and white people say that all the white shooters are crazy, it goes back to the standard, right? Uh-huh. We set a standard for what we think. And I say it as a lifelong newspaper person. You cannot believe everything you read in the newspaper. Mm-mm. And you can sort of use your common sense. But at the same time, a lot of people consume media like that in terms of the stories that bolster what they already think. So it's like it also has that unintended consequence. You know, yeah. The universe readjusts itself to fit my belief system. But yeah, actually, the friends of the shooter, basically, the one interview I saw said, well, the guy said, well, I just didn't want to judge. I didn't want to judge. And there are certain things what we should have boundaries about. Yeah. Anyway, you're listening to KBOO Portland. We have a full slate of callers. Let's just go back to the phone lines. Dave, what's going on with you today?
Hi. You said you were talking about standards.
Yeah.
In the mid-90s or late 90s or maybe even the early 2000s around Portland, Mississippi, 21st, there were giant swastikas floating around the city. Do you remember that?
I don't remember that specific thing, but I definitely remember that time and all the other stuff that went on with white supremacists
right.
in the city of Portland.
That's right. That's right. James Byrd in Jasper, Texas, was lynched mm-hmm. with a pickup truck by two white guys.
Yeah.
Okay. A couple of years ago, one was executed and one's still in prison for that crime. Estacada, there was an attempted copycat crime of the same magnitude. But they didn't get away with it.
I never heard of that case.
You did or you didn't?
Did not.
Okay, well, it was on Channel 8 News. Brenda Braxton was a primetime anchor at the time. She's now on Noontime, okay? But she was on 6 o'clock news. They had that report, and the police officer said, "We don't see a hate crime," and that was the end of it. And that's where all of this starts from. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, Dave. Dave rocks.
Yeah, he does.
I had never heard of that case, and I have to tell you that I worked at the Clackamas County News in Estacada in 1988 or 89. So that's why I'm going, what? And Brenda Braxton, I think she does a good job.
Oh, yeah.
She's one of the people that's doing good work out there. So this is KBOO Community Radio. I'm Lisa. We're here with Teresa. We're talking about Black Lives Matter, Don't Shoot Portland. We need to get to the point where we talk about the fundraiser for Teresa. Let's get to that point. But we have a few more callers. Let's try to cycle through those calls. Carlos, what's going on, man?
Hey, what's going on, Lisa? Hey, that the whole issue of just the Confederate flag, I mean, just that symbol, you know, the fact that folks fly it around and what have you is something that just really puzzles me. I live in Vancouver now, and there's quite a few Confederate flags that I see on a pretty regular basis. And also in Oregon, you know, when I was living in Portland, I saw that quite a bit. I would say that I probably saw it most of the time on the back of people's trucks,
yeah.
you know, their vehicles, that sort of thing. But I'd like to hear from folks, I'd like to hear some kind of an explanation as to kind of why, you know, we have clothing brands and there's logos and stuff like that where the Confederate flag is kind of taken almost as a symbol of just kind of white rebellion, you know what I mean, like oh, I'm a tough guy or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. But it's broadly, you know, understood that the Confederate flag is a very offensive racist symbol. How is it that white folks are able to kind of look past that and still identify with this symbol as something that's part of their identity without being racist, you know what I mean? I just don't understand that. So that's something I'd be interested in getting some feedback from, maybe the listeners or what have you, or anybody else wants to take that on. But that's something that just has puzzled me for the longest time.
Remember when Kanye West tried to do a clothing line with a Confederate flag?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's
trying to take it back. He freaked people out. People couldn't accept it.
Yeah. You know,
but here's one.
I remember that.
Okay, I'm just going to out myself as a white trash cracker person. I am. And I've been doing my ancestry now for a few years. And I could even name to you my ancestors who enslaved people, which is horrible. Okay? It's horrible. And I'm telling you right now that it's just my personal opinion as a white person who is descended from white people that, you know, actually the capitalist system really doesn't work for almost anyone, except for the people at the very top.
That's right.
And there was a point in the history of the United States, well, before the history of the United States and the colonies, where there were African-descended indentured servants, and there were also European indentured servants in the same place. I want to say like around 1620 in Virginia, maybe, is when the law was passed that gave deliberately, it gave the white people more rights than the black people, deliberately, right then. And the idea was to make sure that all the poor people did not fight against the I almost used an obscenity again, the sort of, I'm just going to say, I do have a few ancestors who were like nobility. What does that mean? I don't know. So those people tried to lord it over the other people in the so-called New World that was mm-hmm. new to my ancestors, right? This thing, dividing people and trying to get some people to stand on top of other people to make themselves look taller, that's what our system does. That's what our economic system does. It doesn't really reward most rank and file human beings for cooperating, really, although it could if we looked at it that way. So you have like the 1%. I don't mean to be so tiresome as that. The 1% stands on high and looks down at all the rest of us and laughs, right? So the Confederate flag is part of that. It's the brainwashing. I'm going to say that. My ancestors came from the South. They came from the East Coast and the South. And it's like the thought that, you know, one certain kind of person should be in charge of everything is gnarly. There's been studies that showed that white people, plenty of white people in the United States, think that they're more oppressed than black people. So it's, we use the term mental illness. I don't know if that's the term, but it's like, it's, I, to me, it's a function of the power and control.
Yeah.
And I've had too much coffee now. So anybody has something to say?
But it's like, how much of that is subconscious? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And how much of that is really something that folks are aware of? You know, I mean, there's something that's deep in the psyche of,
I agree.
Of you know, white Americans that it's difficult for them to let go. And that's the thing that really kind of interests me. You know, I mean, it's...
And I wanted to say, Carlos, this is the thing. Let's stop denying that people are proud of their heritage, and even if it includes hate and power. To me, they're not subconsciously not seeing that. How do you know that they're not consciously just proud of it? You know,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, it's a symbol. It's a symbol of hate for those who were oppressed under it. But for those who accommodated themselves to see value in it, it still represents power, you know,
and that's intentional. That's something that I have a hard time ruling that out, you know, and that's the thing. You know, you want to give folks the benefit of the doubt, but when they're, you know, flying something like that in their front yard, okay, what is it? What's the message that you're trying to tell us?
It's to let you know what's happening. I've had a white woman tell me one time, and this was my, and I'll probably get in trouble for this, but it was my son's girlfriend's mom. And she said, I'm just going to tell it like it is. And she was, you know, basically having an aggressive conversation with me where I wasn't fighting her, but she wanted to let me know that she didn't respect me and that she wasn't going to be influenced by any of my charms or clever speaking to even want to like me. She was letting me know that I'm going to be aggressive towards you, and I'm going to continue to be rude towards you because I have no wants to be decent. You know, that's her privilege, and I have the same type of privilege, but I don't use it to promote hate.
Wow. Carlos, I want to ask you a question, and if you don't want to answer this, it's fine. You, I think you've worked with incarcerated youth in the past.
Yeah, I still do.
How do they see it?
How
do they see it? The race, the racial issues, the flag, or anything. Do they talk about it? What do they think?
That's a good question. I'll probably ask them that when I get back there.
Yeah.
I know that black and brown folks there are deeply offended by it. There's no question. And I know that the folks that are behind it, you know, the white folks, because there are white kids that are incarcerated that are very much a part of that. They tend to be more isolated from what I've seen. But I don't know. I don't know that I would identify it anything, you know, as anything much different than you see out in the public, you know. I think the same types of feelings are there, you know. I mean, it's deeply offensive to folks of color and you know, the folks that are behind it. I think the ones that are, you know, flying those flags are pretty open about it. You know what I mean? For the folks that I've seen that I've actually had a chance to interact with. But the weird phenomenon that I see are the folks that just, you know, they're like the dirt bike riders, you know, they like doing the off-roading, and that's just kind of a flag that they all have on their T-shirt, their sticker, or something like that. And it's kind of more of a subtle type of thing, you know? It's almost like a closet racism that's going on or something like that.
So you have the subconscious bias, and then you have the people that are literally, I'm just going to say, this is rude. We're being honest now. My ex-brother-in-law, I always liked him, you know, hail fellow, well met. He's from Georgia, and he's one of those guys. He's in the military. I don't know why I think of incarceration and the military as being very comparable. Mm-hmm. And that's rude, and I don't mean to be rude on that. I can be rude on other things. But I just see them. They're so regimented, right? But he's the guy, love him, he's the guy with a big flag on his big truck, and if you said anything, he would just lean into you and go, what? You know what I mean? It's an in-your-face challenge.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a man, and I'm in charge, And I've been done bad by the people who think that they are oppressed. And it's a thing. And I don't know what to do with that.
Actually. Well, here's another example. Georgia also. I've got a friend, like a school friend, you know, a kid that I knew from you know, like elementary school. And we're still in touch, you know, through Facebook and that sort of thing. And she had gone. She was kind of driving around, and she took some photos of, like, a burial site of Confederate soldiers that she had passed. And she had taken some photos of it, clearly marked with the Confederate flag. And she had put a note on there, like, oh, history, you know. It's like, well, yeah, but is that something that you really want to be posting on your Instagram, what have you? I mean, like, I think there's quite a bit of ignorance still.
Very
you
much
know,
so.
That's on that subject matter. Mm-hmm. It's like, don't you, I mean, how... At what point in your life did you miss the fact that that's really offensive to a lot of people? You know, and
when they took it out of the school's curriculum, when they start,
well,
I mean, you see how we candy coat everything now. I mean,
that's true.
Talk about the enslaved women that were with Thomas Jefferson being in love with him and having relationships. They're not saying rape and abuse and molestation,
yeah.
Enslavement. You know, enslavement, brutal. You know, violence,
yeah.
They don't use those words. So we're finessed by the language that we use in this country to promote the socialism behind the hate.
You know what else, too, Carlos, and then we'll let you go. I mean, I could talk with you all day. I think you should actually come here now. But Carlos, it's always such a pleasure. But yeah, I don't know if you remember, but there was a clothing label called No Fear. Okay, No Fear. It was actually created by white supremacists.
Yeah.
And it turned into like a sports label or something. And all kinds of people wore it, had no idea. Because they just assume if they bought it at Target or whatever, that it can't actually have any real thought behind it. But here it's just, I don't know. It's and that kind of thing really insinuated itself into the people who, you know, I guess Richard Nixon called the silent majority. I don't know. But anyway, Carlos, it's always a pleasure to hear from you.
Hey,
and
thanks.
I hope I hear from you again soon.
I appreciate the time.
Thank you. This is KBOO Portland. You're listening to Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm Lisa Loving. I'm filling in today for Paul Roland, and we're live in the studio with community activist Teresa Rayford. We're just, like I said, covering all kinds of ground here, having some great calls, wonderful people calling. Of course, that number 503-231-8187. We have one very, very patient caller on the line, I believe. Jackson, what's going on?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Carlos, here's your answer. And here's the answer. I'm going to be a little controversial with KBOO this morning and get a little beehive going.
Okay.
Mainly because of this. Carlos, this is what these symbols represent. These symbols represent white male supremacy. They're basically telling you who the real boss is in their minds. Okay, and the symbol of it being offensive is to remind you who's ultimately running things.
That's right. I think
okay?
That's true.
That's why that I am from South Carolina. Okay, and it was always a big deal with that flag.
Yeah,
right. And that flag basically means look. We took this land and did what we had to do. You know, like planting the flag after you successfully won a battle.
Or even going on the moon.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. This is all about supremacy, but it's subtle. It's a subtle reminder of telling you, the women and all the minorities, who the boss is.
Yeah.
Period. I'm white male. I'm learning things. I killed up all the Indians, and I also got all these other people over here under me, and I'm letting you know who's running things, boys. That's how it works. It fascinates me. It's crazy that I listen to cable, and no one's really tried to reverse engineer the psychological control that people are having to deal with. That's what all these, the fascist symbol, white male supremacy, any of the biker gang. Look at the symbols on their, what you call them. You'll see the double electric symbol, the double
Thunderbolts.
Thunderbolts, yes. That's white male supremacy.
Okay.
Same with that thing called the Iron Cross. A lot of people put that on, the Iron Cross. Mm-hmm. It was the other big symbol of the Nazis, and that's what that was, the symbol of the No Fear clothing label,
well,
I think.
Telling each other. They're telling each other, and then there's a lot of winking and nodding going on, especially up here in the Pacific Northwest. Okay? And, you know, I'd appreciate it if there was some type of infiltration by the good whites of cable to give us some real information.
Yeah, we need training classes on white supremacy so we can recognize it when we see it.
See, this is why the prisons are still filled up disproportionately with black men, because middle class and working class black people, they haven't gotten it yet. We're still in the dark. We're still dealing with the same psychology we've been dealing with for the last 150 years, with the house slave and the field slave, and people not want this. You know, everyone's slitting their throats trying to get into the house. You know, and I mean, Miss Loving, this is something you may not understand, the psychology of African Americans. Okay. There's a lot of dirty secrets going on with African Americans, with us selling each other out.
Thank you.
Okay? And someone needs to bring this up, because it's a hard subject, because I will always go back to the prison industrial complex. Mm. Always. Whenever someone tells me I'm crazy, I'm going, why is it that we're 13% of the population and we have that many black people? And all these single black females out here. And no one, that's treachery, and it's treachery of the worst. It's treachery against one DNA. It's people selling people out so that they can have their wooden floors and get their good pieces of meat.
Mm, Jackson, I wish that you would come here and be a KB volunteer.
I want you to have a show. I know.
You're on the subject.
I just want some truth. I'll let you go.
Hey, wait, Jackson. Hold on a second, though. I want to flag a couple of KBOO shows for you where these issues are talked about with some regularity and intelligence. And one of them is called Guess Who's Coming to Radio. It's produced by Jamila Bordone on Thursday nights. Look for that. Thursday nights.
It's on the nights. These subjects need
like,
to
stop
come
hiding
out.
It.
Dying as a result of these white male symbols.
This is true.
They're younger kids. We're taking this stuff seriously.
Yeah, they are.
And, you know, children, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that kid who shot those, he's a kid.
Yeah.
And children will always tell on the adults. Always. If you want to find out what the adults are, just watch the kids. All right? Here, it's been 50 years, and we're still dealing with this. And in the end, it's actually African Americans to blame.
Yeah.
Because we're still trying to get in the big house. I don't want to use up any more of your airtime.
All right, Carlos, it's
a symbol. Carlos, it's a symbol reminding you who the real boss is, Carlos. All right? When you see that symbol, that guy says, I'm your boss. And if you stand up to me, I'll show you I'm your boss. Have a good day, Cable.
Jackson, thank you for calling. I want to know where Jackson's blog is. I want to hear Jackson's
yes.
podcast. I want to hear more from Jackson. And I hope you call again. I hope you call again sometime soon. This is KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm sitting in this morning. My name is Lisa. We're live in the studio with Teresa Rayford. We're talking about current events. We're talking about Black Lives Matter movement. We're talking about Don't Shoot Portland. And we've been talking about the shooting in Charleston and these Confederate battle flags and why they still have an impact on life now. I'm going to go through really quickly and let you know that coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Political Perspectives, we'll hear Radio Eco Shock featuring Dr. Robert Kopp explaining why humans die in heat waves and why that will get worse as climate change develops. Then Dr. Jeremy Leggett talks about winning the carbon war. Big heat wave in, was it Chicago? The Chicago heat wave. 90% of all the people who passed away were African American and hundreds of people died in that. Climate change is a racial issue.
It is.
I have to say that. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints features more analysis on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That's the job you're not going to get. And a look at Oregon Governor Brown. She's Governor Brown, Governor of Oregon.
Yeah.
I thought that was a typo, signing of the testing opt-out bill. At 11, Stephanie Potter hosts The Recovery Zone. Her guest is author and poet. She's got Martine Prechtel on the air, who talks about his new book, The Smell of Rain on Dust, Grief and Praise. Martine Prechtel could be a person of interest to people listening to this conversation right now, and that's at 11. Thanks for listening to KBOO and donate today.
That's right.
So, Teresa, we just heard a lot from Jackson. That guy was totally...
He was really
spot on, personally. These are hard truths that some of us who look like me don't necessarily want to deal with. You know, I never enslaved you, and yet I'm here to tell you, listeners, your people enslaved.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway, what's your take?
Well, my thing is that from the inception of this country, being taken from the natives and everything that goes in it, it goes further than the 50 years. And what I grew up, I went to Dallas in 96, and I went to the African American Art Museum, and I saw these postcards, and I saw all these different images of lynchings. Now, the people in the lynchings, it was women, children, elders, young people, police officers, Ku Klux Klan, they were community around the lynchings, and they were smiling. They're looking at what they did as an accomplishment. There wasn't mental health in that. These people really knew how to hate. They really knew how to grow the hate. They knew how to build economic hate within their communities, and they thrived on it. And I'm not talking about in slavery. I'm talking about 50 years ago, 60 years ago. Those are the images that are out there. People wearing suits, dressed up in their Sunday best.
Smiling with picnic and pointing baskets, at the dead bodies. Yeah.
Smiling and children, pointing. And there's no feeling that you're doing something uncharacteristic as a human. I've never seen animals treated that way, but it's acceptable in our country to see that history and to dismiss people who speak on it. And people like Jackson, who says, see, people think I'm crazy. Well, right now, with everything that's happening in the world and people doing their due diligence and researching what they're seeing on Google or on Twitter or things like that, we're seeing that we haven't been lying or going crazy because we feel a certain way. Those are the dynamics of our social situation. This is what we're living in. These are the symbols that we see. This is the way that we're treated. When I go into a store and I say hi to the person behind the register and she doesn't say hi back and throws my money on the counter and is happy to see the person behind me or the one before me, that's not me tripping. You know, that's ingrained hate. And I don't want to continue to say, you know, I'm going to deny that it exists. It does exist. And we need to start all calling it out. White people need to start calling it out. We need to go ahead and build curriculums about it. Dartmouth decided to build a curriculum based on Ferguson. But it's all about the history, the visual images, and the poetry. Let's talk about the real hate that's behind it, just like with the Whitelandia Project. Let's talk about the systematic hate. Let's talk about the politicians who are a part of it. Let's talk about the environment. And what the actual plan, you know, the planning and development of these issues were. Let's talk about what's really there. It's sustained. I mean, we talk about sustainability. Hate is sustainable. They've continued to hold on to it in our country, and we have to live with it. But we don't have to.
We don't have to. And the other thing about the hate, and I don't, you know, I'm a white lady, so I want to turn around and say, what's bad for white people about that is it's killing us, right? It's killing all of us. You know, it's much slower if you're white, and you know, but when, and I see this in my family too, people who hold on to that hate, and it's also, it comes from sort of fear and paranoia. Someone's mm-hmm. trying to take something away from me.
That's the guilt. That's not fear. That's guilt. You've killed. Guilt. You've been benefiting from pain
for generations,
hate.
Hundreds
so
of years.
That's
actually.
Not fear. You're not afraid of me. You're not grabbing your kid because you're afraid of me. You're guilty for what your ancestors or somebody that you adore has done to somebody that looks like me. And you think that I have it in my heart to treat you the same way.
Right. And the thing is, too, that as I look around at my family, I look around at my communities, I see loads of people. These are the people that do not listen to KBOO who are getting these pharmaceutical drugs for their diabetes. And they're eating themselves to death. They're doing all these things because our society doesn't make sense. It doesn't work. And so at what point do we change it? It's KBOO Portland. We've got a full slate of callers. Let's go back to the phone lines. Edie's on the line. Edie, what's going on?
Hey, thank you so much. I just last night was listening to TED Talk about people having to come out of the closet. The closet being our fear. We try to protect ourselves from a hard conversation. And racism and classism is a hard conversation that we need to talk about from the heart, from the head, and do something about, not just empty words. And I commend the courage and the integrity, and how we need to have empathy for each other, because we all have hard, and we all are scared, And it's really easy to just say we are right and they are wrong and not listen to each other. And if that's part of what fascism, racism, classism, sexism, you know, all kinds of oppression depends upon, not hearing the story, not seeing the humanity of someone else. We don't want to do the same thing they do. And one of the things that seems so interesting to me is that the Confederate flag seems to bring up the same issues for people, though they have completely opposite perceptions on those needs. For some people, it's extreme danger and threat and the violation of safety and oppression. And for other people, it is it's a claim for safety and security and autonomy. It's an affirmation of your individuality, your autonomy, your community.
Really? I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Yeah. I guess you're trying to get into the mind of racist people and trying to figure out what they're thinking, which is awesome. And empathy. It's actually not really confusing. It seems pretty black and white. I want to thank you so much for calling, Edie. And the thing I wanted to add to great. And so I wanted to say also, when Jackson was saying, you know, white people, why don't you go infiltrate the white supremacists and let us know what's going on? I think that's a great idea, actually. I don't know who would do it because we're almost all volunteers. The thing is, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them think. But that is a great idea. And it makes me wonder if someone has done it and we just need to dig out the story.
And what Edie said and then what Jackson said in regards to that, what I've learned and what I see and what is asked of me is to come and sit down and talk to white people about racism and how it makes me feel. And I'll be damned if I spend my time educating you on how I feel. If you don't know that what you're doing or how you feel is morally wrong, then I don't even have time to be in the same room with you if I can help it. But what I will do is educate my children. I'll educate my community so that they'll know what they're up against. Because what we've done as a society with our gatekeepers and everybody else, we are more determined to get foundations and grants to talk to white people about how they should feel about us. They already know. We're not in an ignorant society. Racism doesn't mean that you're illiterate, that you're ignorant, that you're country bumpkin or any of that. It means that you're aware. And in that awareness, you've grabbed the desires that you want to be and to add to your character. So I'm not about to help you disengage from that. I don't have time for that. What I do have time for is dealing with the children in our community that don't even know that there are people out there that hate them until they get about 12 or 13 years old, or until they become a young woman and somebody says, hey, you know, and treats them as if they're a foot warmer or something like that. Because that is what exists in our society. And we're not preparing our children for it. The people in our race that have sold out, it's because they want to accommodate someone else's feelings of, I need to feel better about my guilt, but they're not dealing with the education that's necessary in their own communities. And so we are feeling sold out because you have more time to talk to the bad guy about what's wrong, but you're not dealing with what needs to be happening in our communities. So
we are beginning to think about the possibility of running out of show, and I want to make sure that Teresa gets a chance to talk about, there's a fundraiser going on. I want to hear more about that.
Well, I just found out not too long ago, my daughter's friend Cameron Stark actually works for Compose Yourself magazine, and he did a story on me. He knew me when I was in Texas before I came up here and had to deal with the tragedy of my nephew being killed, which is what threw me into activism. And when he came out here, he didn't know, like, first of all, that I wasn't getting paid for the stuff that I had, that I had been doing in our community. He didn't know that there wasn't a lot of community support. He thought I was kind of like Dr. King, where, you know, you go into a city and you're there to revolutionize what's happening in society and the people in society take care of you. He thought that I had foundation. And recently he realized that I don't. He realized that, you know, my mom just recently was gentrified out of her place. And so she's staying with my sister and I'm staying with a friend of mine, and that I don't have my own place and that I don't have money. And so he put together a GoFundMe because he's like, I'm leaving town, you know, and I want to make sure you're okay before I go. So he put together a GoFundMe for me, and I'll send you the link if I can find it. I see that Mimi had called in about it. And I didn't want to ask, but he said, I'll ask for you because you'll never ask, and we're not going to let you, you know, sit out here and die or become destitute. So he put together a GoFundMe to help me find a place so that I can have a temporary place. And I just filled out for a FAFSA because I guess I got to, you know, join them if I can't beat them. I just wanted to be a social justice community servant. But I guess I'm going to end up going back to school. And
Teresa Rayford, I'm on my computer. I'm trying to do a quick search for a GoFundMe to actually support Teresa, but I'm pulling up a dozen that she made to help other people. So we need to get that information out there. We could put it on the social media. We can tweet it and stuff like that.
I'm scared to look at the links, so that's why I don't know it. Because
and so this young man, Cameron Stark, that set this up, he's a young white guy. Mm-hmm. So love, right? Love.
He's my daughter's best friend from Texas. He grew up in Texas. His family's, you know, they saw him out here protesting with us and started deleting him from their pages and everything. But it didn't stop him from holding our banner, and it doesn't stop him from uplifting our movement in his writing.
I'll be darned. And anyway, we have three callers. We've got about 5 minutes left. Callers, okay, I'm going to try to run you through real quick, and I'm so sorry that this is the end of the show because I know there's some people that I love and I want to hear what you have to say. So, Francis, what's going on, hon?
Oh, my dear, I'm sorry that I tuned in so late, but I appreciate Teresa a lot. She's a joy for me to listen to. Jackson said it, and I've discovered years ago that it is a white man supremacist thing, and it's been there for a long time. I can remember when my husband first went to prison. He's an African American. When he was, I'll just give you one little scenario. I have many for my sons with these people, but mm-hmm. my husband was in a courtroom waiting for a hearing to reduce his bail. A white man who had been charged with molesting a child had the same bail as my husband, $25,000. And 44 years ago, that was a lot of money for anybody. And the white man got released on his own cognizance. My husband, the judge refused to release him, and he was being charged with armed robbery.
Wow.
And I remember sitting there thinking to myself, which man I would rather have in the community with me right now. Mm. And as I was leaving the courtroom, my husband was being escorted out to where they take him, and I was able to pat him on the shoulder, just pat him on the shoulder and tell him it's going to be okay. And then I got to the elevator, out in the hall, down the hall, in the elevator with his attorney, and this bailiff had run all the way out of the courtroom to come tell me, this little white girl, that bodily contact is not allowed in the courtroom.
Wow.
And I looked at that man, and he does not know what I was thinking, and I'm glad I was able to hold my tongue.
No kidding,
but
Francis.
At that moment, I realized, oh, that's what this is all about.
It's true. Yeah.
And my presence there was not a good thing for my husband, probably.
Oh, but, no. But it was good for
you
him.
You know what I'm saying?
You know. But, yeah, you know,
and
he...
I got it. I got it, and it's been that way ever since I see it. And thank you, Jackson, for verbalizing it so well.
Thanks, Francis.
Thank you, Teresa, for your words.
We got to run to the next caller. Thank you for calling. And we have Paul on the phone. Paul, what's going on with you?
Hi. I just really wanted to thank Teresa for... all the work she's been doing here in Portland. I myself and a few friends have gone out and marched with Don't Shoot and, you know, Black Lives Matter. And I really like her energy and, you know, keep up the good work. But I just wanted to say, as far as racism goes, you know, there's a lot of BS going on in the world. And I don't think it's just, you know, hand-me-downs from people's ancestors that's keeping this racism alive in this country. I think we should look at our education mm-hmm. system. And look at, you know, Darwin and his family and their work in eugenics and stuff like that, and how eugenics has to play with viewing different races that aren't white and looking at them as lower classes and all that kind of stuff. So just wanted to throw that out there. And, yeah.
Wow, Paul. That's big. That was big. That was a big way to end this show. So we just have like 2 minutes left, Teresa. Tell us, where do we find out more about your work and how do we support your work?
Okay, well, since we don't have a lot of funding, and you know that we are on Facebook, we have a Facebook page called Don't Shoot Portland, and you can get there by going to facebook.com/Don't Shoot PDX. We're in the community. We keep our updates on the Facebook page. Like I said, we have a rally coming up this Friday. We're easy to contact via Gmail, don'tshootportland@gmail. Every Tuesday, we have work group meetings over at PCC in the union with the PCC Action Club. And I just want to make an announcement that I will be going to Chicago from the 1st through the 5th to be a part of a socialism conference. And I'll be speaking on the mass incarceration. And they're going to be having several Black Lives Matter movement panels. So I'll be able to network with some people and hopefully bring home some best practices from other organizers and activists and people in the communities doing grassroots work across the country.
And people, look for us to post the information about the GoFundMe on our social media. My apologies to people who are not connected to the internet. That's it for our show. Thanks to our guest, Teresa Rayford. Don't Shoot Portland on Facebook. Black Lives Matter. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Kush, the studio dog. This show will be podcast on KVU.fm by the end of today. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for Political Perspectives.
Time again, time for another 3-day community festival at Good in the Hood 2015, which is sure to bring even more than before. Starting June 26th through June 28th at Lil's Albina Park, there will be a celebration of community with live music, kid space, lots of local foods, and a chance for health screening too. KBOO is also in the Good in the Hood parade, and we want our members and volunteers to participate. For more information, contact Ani Haynes at volunteer@kboo.org. Again, good in-